This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and guests about politics. It's Thursday, February 11th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker.
And I want to talk today about our plan. And the January job numbers came out today. And while we're grateful for everyone who found work and is earning a paycheck, it's very clear our economy is still in trouble.
Since early in the general election campaign, Joe Biden has promised that his first order of business as president would be to provide COVID relief to the American people. This week, as Donald Trump undergoes his second impeachment trial, Biden is focused on passing his American Rescue Plan, a $1.9 trillion COVID relief package. Biden talked throughout his campaign about putting an end to the corrosive relationship between the two parties. But on February 5th, during a speech at the White House, he made it clear that he'll move ahead with the plan despite objections from Republicans.
I've told both Republicans and Democrats that's my preference to work together. But if I have to choose between getting help right now to Americans who are hurting so badly and getting bogged down in a lengthy negotiation, or compromising on a bill that's up to the crisis, that's an easy choice. I'm going to help the American people who are hurting now.
John Cassidy, a New Yorker staff writer, joins me to discuss Biden's bold plan to boost the economy and what it tells us about the Democrats' strategy in Congress. John, it's good to have you back.
Hi, Dorothy. Thanks for inviting me on.
You are the magazine's in-house economist, and I always call on you to make sense of policies that have major economic and political ramifications. So we haven't had you on the program since Biden was elected. Could you just briefly describe the state of the economy this winter?
Going into the election, the economy looked reasonably strong, but because of a big uptick in COVID-19 since the election, we've had a big setback in the economy. A lot of people have been laid off again, lots of furloughs. So for the last couple of months, there's basically been negative job growth, if you put the two of them together. So we've had another big stall in the economy. Biden was already promising to introducing big stimulus or relief package, probably more accurately described as relief package. And the stall in the economy that we've seen over the last couple of months has given him more impetus to do that. And he's now pushing ahead with a very big stimulus plan, a $1.9 trillion package, which it looks like they're going to push through the Senate using reconciliation process, which won't need any Republican votes.
So maybe give us a quick summary of the key provisions.
This goes back to last year when there was a big debate about a second stimulus, if you remember. There was the huge CARES Act back in March, and then there really probably should have been a second stimulus around about September because some of the provisions of the original package ran out, but there wasn't. Congress eventually passed a $900 billion package in December, which sort of went only a little more than a third of the way towards what the Democrats wanted originally. Biden is basically picking up on most of the points in the original Democratic plan. There is another big cash payment to individuals, $1,400, which will come on top of the $600 in the December package. More money for the states, which have been hard hit because of the falling tax revenues. A lot more money for vaccinations and testing. And then some other provisions which aren't directly related to COVID, a big ambitious plan for child tax credits, which effectively is going to introduce a child allowance system. And also it looks like they're going to put a higher minimum wage into the package as well, a $15 minimum wage. So it's a very big, ambitious package, which tackles the COVID downturn in a very aggressive manner, but also includes some of longstanding targets and policies of the Democratic Party.
There's been some criticism by Republicans and moderate Democrats and some economists who argue that payments should be limited to lower income Americans. And they've been pointing out that many who receive the first round of stimulus checks save them rather than spending them. Biden has indicated that he'd consider some moderate changes on this point. What do you think? Where should the limit be?
Well, Biden originally said he'd stick with the provisions of the original CARES Act, which basically gave the full amount to anybody earning $75,000 a year and couples earning $150,000. Biden then, under pressure, as you say, hinted that he might reduce it to $50,000, $100,000 for couples. There's a lot of blowback against that, both from House Democrats and also even some Republicans who said, look, $75,000 is middle class. It's not, you're not rich if you earn $75,000 a year. And it looks like the Democrats in the White House are now going back to the original plan of giving a full amount to everybody who earns up to $75,000 and $150,000. What do I think? I think that is reasonable. You know, if you're strictly on economic grounds, you can make the argument, look, this is not well targeted. A lot of people are just sitting at home working, professional people especially, highly educated people especially. Why don't we just focus the money on the really needy? The counter argument to that is it's actually very difficult to figure out who is the very needy and who has been hit hard. You can make the argument a lot of families who are earning $75,000, $100,000 may have been earning $150,000 before, but one of the earners has lost their job or is going on low payments, etc. By just doing it on a very broad basis with relatively high income limits, you do get everybody. The cost is that, sure, you are going to give some money to some people who probably don't need it. And the argument Biden or others make to that is, look, this is the middle of a national crisis. It's like a wartime. In wartime, we don't worry about, some money being wasted here and there. The most important thing is to go as big as necessary. And that's the argument they're making.
Biden has always prided himself on being a moderate Democrat. The scale of this stimulus package has been compared to FDR's New Deal. Is that the right comparison?
I mean, I think it's a fair comparison in that Biden is making the argument that the previous administration wasn't ambitious enough and wasn't focused enough in tackling the COVID disaster, just as FDR made the argument that Hoover didn't react aggressively enough to the Great Depression, and that we just have to take out, all stops have to be pulled out. We have to sort of throw out some of the old rules. I'm just publishing a piece at the moment on the sort of economic models which Biden is sort of casting aside, which said you've got to be fearful of setting off an inflation spiral. The Biden administration is basically saying, look, this is we've got bigger crises to deal with than inflation at this moment. If that becomes a problem in years ahead, we can deal with it. The problem now is unemployment, people losing incomes, getting the vaccinations done and getting the economy back on track. So that is, in total, a sort of similar attitude to what FDR took in the early 30s, which was basically, let's try everything to get things back on track.
One of the things that interests me is that Biden seems to also have learned from Republicans, and the GOP is generally much better at simple political messaging than the Democrats are. They tend to get all tangled up in policy wonkery and political differences among themselves. And, you know, ever since Reagan's presidency, Republicans talked just nonstop about reducing the size of government, lowering taxes and doing away with regulations. It was just pro forma. Biden's message, at least right now, is even simpler than that. Just get help to Americans who need it as quickly as possible.
Right. I mean, it's a very effective message, I think. As you say, he's not sort of delving into the sort of economic arguments about the size of the government and inflation, unemployment, etc. Economists are having strong debates about that. But Biden is sort of floating above all that, as you say, and basically saying, look, this is a wartime style crisis. Let's take wartime style measures to deal with it. And I think that's a very effective message. Most of the opinion polls show that this stimulus package is very popular. Obviously, direct payments are always very popular. Biden, in a way, is adopting a sort of very populist line here and saying that the important thing politically is to deliver tangible, clear benefits to the voters, and that they'll thank us for them and won't really take much notice of all the political debates and political machinations in Washington. And I think, that's probably a fair bet.
His efforts to tame the party's fractious tendencies began soon after he became the Democratic nominee, when he and Bernie Sanders announced those joint working groups on a range of issues from climate change to criminal justice reform. And he has really managed to maintain that sense of unity since. It's partly, I guess, because the Republicans have been so helpful on this front, given the storming of the Capitol on January 6th and the second impeachment trial going forward. But he has stayed very focused on his agenda.
No, that's very true. And I mean, I think the Biden agenda is in the center of where the Democratic Party is now. The Democratic Party is considerably to the left in economic terms than it was 10 or 15 years ago. So Biden, as I say, the reason I think he's able to hold the party together is that he's reached out to the progressives, to people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. He's even got the support of AOC and the Squad, who seem pretty much behind him on all this. But he's also bringing along the centrists in the party. There was some talk about that, you know, maybe Senator Joe Manchin would object to the size of his stimulus. Looks like he's dropped his objections. So I think for once, the Democratic Party has presented a pretty united, broad front at a time when the Republicans are basically in chaos and shambles. So I think it looks like, at the moment anyway, that most of Biden's package will go through in the next month or so.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit NewYorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
Biden, as we know, served in the Senate for 36 years, and he always talks about all of his friends in Congress and both parties. He has obvious respect for the legislative branch, and he's talked about the importance of unity and bipartisanship after all those years of Donald Trump. But clearly, Republicans aren't on board with his plan, and the Democrats do intend to push this stimulus bill through immediately through budget reconciliation, as you mentioned. Talk to us first, just quickly, about what budget reconciliation means.
Well, budget reconciliation means basically there's a different set of rules for passing laws which affect the long-term budget outlook of the country. Most of the laws, you need 60 votes to pass in the Senate. But anything which is related to the budget, finance, taxes, spending, can be passed through reconciliation with 51 votes. As soon as the results came in from Georgia and it was clear it was going to be a 50-50 Senate, it became pretty certain that Biden would be able to pass a substantial stimulus package using reconciliation. The good news he's received in the last few days is that it looks like he's also going to be able to attach a minimum wage, a big hike in the minimum wage to that, through reconciliation. Now, that's sort of counterintuitive. Why is a higher minimum wage have anything to do with the budget? And the reason is because the Congressional Budget Office put out a study the other day which showed actually the minimum wage will have an impact on taxes and spending because wages will go up, prices will go up, etc. So taxes will be affected.
Yeah, there a number of people have raised the question about how raising the minimum wage would affect small businesses and make it difficult for them to bring back all of their workers.
Yeah, I mean, the economic debate has sort of changed over the last 10 or 15 years. 10 or 15 years ago, I would say the consensus of economists was that raising the minimum wage, especially by a large amount, $15, would have a pretty big substantial impact on employment, as you say, especially small businesses. In the economics profession, that consensus has now broken down. And the consensus now is that there's likely to be a much smaller impact on employment. The Congressional Budget Office the other day in this study I referred to, they said, I think, that it would, over 10 years, it would reduce the number of wages by about 1.9 million. I'd have to double-check that, but I think that was the figure, which sounds like a lot. But, you know, in an economy of 330 million people over 10 years, that isn't actually. Yes, it's certainly some small businesses would be affected. There's always been an argument, which I thought was a reasonable one, maybe that, you know, the national minimum wage should be split into different regions of the country where there are different costs of living. Democrats have never sort of gone down that route. So we're going to have, looks like, a national minimum wage of $15 phased in and over the next 5 years. Now, before you say that sounds radical or anything, Target and various other large companies have already introduced a minimum wage of $15. So I don't think it's any way unreasonable to aim for a $15 minimum wage.
Some of our listeners may remember that throughout the presidential campaign, even when just about everyone had written off Joe Biden, you remained pretty confident that he could pull it off. Did you expect him to be as tough as he's been so far?
I think he's been a bit of a revelation so far, Biden, because the sort of beat on him was that he is this senator. He's going to come in and try and cut deals with the Republicans and probably get bogged down in sort of a futile effort to, you know, have a bipartisan outcome, which a lot of people think is what happened with Obama. Although Obama, of course, was facing for a lot of his time in office, Republican control on Capitol Hill, so he didn't have any choice. But Biden, it turns out, you know, he's a pretty good poll. I mean, he's seen the lie of the land. I'm sure if the Georgia election results had gone the other way, he would have had no choice. He would be reaching out a lot more aggressively to the Republicans and trying to do deals with them. But the fact is, if you've got 50 votes and, you know, you've got the vice president to make it 51 and you've got the reconciliation process, you can actually push a lot of things through. I mean, I think they've learned a lesson from McConnell in one way. McConnell is a master of the sort of parliamentary maneuvers to sort of use whatever power he has to its maximum effect. And I think Democrats have said, look, if the Republicans can do this, we can do the same thing exactly, using slightly different rules or whatever. But whatever power we had, let's max it out and get as much of our agenda through as possible, because we know we may end up losing control in 2 years. This is our big chance. Let's do as much as we can.
And that was a pretty bitter lesson that Biden learned, among others, after the Obama administration failed to get Republicans to work with him on health care reform and the stimulus plan of 2009. And clearly, he just decided, I'm not going to be so deferential this time.
No, I think he's an astute politician, Biden. That's what people underestimated during the campaign. I mean, obviously, he's never been a very good sort of retail politician. He's not a great speechifier. He doesn't sort of set crowds alight or anything. But he's been around Washington a long time. He knows his way around the block, and he did a very good job of pulling the party together, as you say, reaching out to the progressives. And you know, he's basically, so far at least, you know, pushing all before him.
Larry Summers, I'm sure you noticed, who held senior economic posts in the Clinton and Obama administrations, wrote an op-ed piece last week saying that the spending on the stimulus package was about three times what's needed, that it could lead to inflation and financial instability and make it more difficult to pass Biden's other initiatives on infrastructure, climate change, education, you know, healthcare, the whole bit. Democrats inside and outside the administration just went nuts. They just pummeled him for that. Is there any merit in Summers' warnings?
Well, I think the reason for the, as you say, very aggressive blowback was that this was seen as a sort of, as Larry Summers giving talking points to the Republicans. And that's exactly what he did. You've seen the Senate, McConnell, I think, mentioned it on the Senate floor. I was watching Fox News over the weekend. They were referring to it frequently. The Republicans thought they saw here a break in the united front of the Democrats. Here's a former Democratic Treasury Secretary saying that the Biden plan's dangerous, is going to lead to economic overheating of the economy. You know, Larry Summers is just not very, we know that going back decades, he's not very subtle politically. And this was just a very clumsy political move on his part to publish that. Now, in terms of the substance of what he said, I'd say two things. Number one, I think he overplayed the sort of danger of inflation. With unemployment up at 6%, probably real unemployment's 8 or 9%, you know, to talk about danger of inflation at this stage, I think is just is really unjustified. Even if the economy comes back strongly, we're not going to get down to 3.5% unemployment, which is what we had a year ago. You know, for at least a year, a couple of years probably, when we could deal with the inflation threat if it appears at that stage. But even when we had 3.5% inflation, unemployment back in December 2019, the inflation rate was still below 2%. So people have been raising this inflation fears for 15 years now, and it just hasn't materialized. And as I say, as Janet Yellen said in an interview earlier this week, even if it does materialize, there are things we can do to deal with it. The Fed, no doubt, will start raising interest rates if they see inflation starting to pick up appreciably. The Congress could, you know, introduce some spending curbs. But Summer's second point about that maybe the Biden administration is putting at risk its broader Build Back Better plan, I think is a more reasonable point to make. I think if they do pass this $1.9 trillion stimulus relief package, which I think is very likely, they're then going to have to go back later in the year or in a few months and ask for another big spending bill for the infrastructure and green infrastructure particularly. And I think that could, you know, be a bit of a stretch, having already had a huge stimulus package at the start of the year. I think that's a more reasonable point to make. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see how the politics plays out. So I'd say, I give Simmers one out of three for his points.
Yeah. But there does seem to be fairly strong political support among voters for some of those other planks. And Biden seems to be gambling that he can restore faith in government and really in our democracy. He's clearly, you know, legitimately alarmed by what we've been seeing in recent months, not by attempting to reach deals with congressional Republicans, but by enacting these economic reforms, show that government can work, and that will give him the political space to move on his other initiatives.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Dorothy. That's clearly the theory they're working on. And, you know, it's a good theory. And let's hope it works. In one sense, we need to restore faith in government. And as you say, Biden's very much focused on sort of tangible benefits that people can see. You saw that actually, you know, in the Trump campaign. One of the things which proved very popular were the checks with Donald Trump's name on them. People who don't follow politics very closely, which is the majority of the population, do follow their personal finances very closely. And if they get a check from the government which has got Donald Trump's name on him, if they get a big check from the government, it probably won't have Joe Biden's name on him because he's not as sort of narcissistic as Trump, but it will come from the Biden administration. People will remember that, I think. And as you say, I think it will place him in good stead going forward. The question is, you know, will we get the big economic rebound, which of course depends on the vaccines and the progress of the virus. It's just hard to say how things are going to look in a few months or 6 months when Biden is going back for another big spending plan.
And we'll get you back then and discuss it further.
Okay, thank you very much, Dorothy. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, John. John Cassie is a staff writer at The New Yorker. He writes a column about politics and economics for NewYorker.com and is the author of How Markets Fail, The Logic of Economic Calamities. This has been The Political Scene. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on NewYorker.com. Feel free to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Our theme music is by Russell Gillespie. This program was produced by Alex Barron and Kylie Warner for NewYorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.